This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The climate is changing, and because we need to deal with it now, we open the next chapter of our series, Degrees of Change. Our series explores the challenges of a changing climate and how we as a planet and a people are adapting to the crisis. This hour, we'll be talking about the climate issues facing Native American communities and how they are tackling and planning for environmental changes. More info on how you can get involved in our coverage and sign up for our climate newsletter at sciencefriday.com/degrees of change. First, we check in on the gatekeepers, the decision makers, the controllers of the purse strings. In this week's State of the Union address, President Trump did not mention two little words with big consequences, climate change. But he did say this.
To protect the environment, days ago, I announced that the United States will join the 1 Trillion Trees Initiative, an ambitious effort to bring together government and private sector to plant new trees in America and all around the world.
Planting trees to suck up carbon is an increasingly popular Republican alternative to limiting fossil fuel emissions. But how practical is it? Joining me to talk about that and other climate stories in the news this week, Scott Waldman, White House reporter at E&E News in Washington. Welcome back, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
Could you unpack this 1 Trillion Trees initiative for us, please?
Sure. Well, this Trump first announced that the U.S. is going to participate in this a couple weeks ago at Davos for the World Economic Forum. And essentially, it's a bunch of world leaders getting together saying that they're going to have this goal over the next few decades of planting 1 trillion trees all around the world. It's not just in the U.S. It's all in places all around the world. And, you know, certainly this is part of what House Republicans are talking about right now as they craft their own climate policy.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this issue with Abigail Whitaker, a project leader at the Center for Economic Development at Cal State University, Chico. And here is what she had to say.
What you often see is that these public forest lands are, they're kind of used as like a regional piggy bank, where if your primary income source fails, you turn to the gig economy and these public lands and public resources that everybody kind of dips into when they have an economic need in their household. So they're going to look there for opportunities to harvest firewood, food, to create charcoal products. So if, say, a government or a business steps in and says, we're going to take advantage of all of this public land that exists here, we're going to plant a large amount of trees, there are often kind of two ways the scenario plays out. Either the government brings in law enforcement to exclude those local people from using the common areas, and local people will lose out on those gig economy livelihood options, or they don't protect the land where they've planted the trees. The local people continue to use it for these other activities, and there's a pretty good chance that the survival rate of the trees will be pretty low. So in terms of carbon sequestration outcomes, it's not a great situation in either case.
Does not look like a win-win here. Scott, Republican lawmakers are working on a climate plan of their own that goes beyond the tree planting, right? Any hints on what that plan might be?
It's a little vague right now, but they did specifically mention this, and there's a bill that's going to be introduced soon that basically would, you know, help us participate in this initiative, sort of force the country to participate in it. But I think they're talking about carbon capture techniques, investing in technology that would capture carbon dioxide from fossil fuel production. And they're also looking at, you know, clean energy investments, better nuclear plants, potentially like more smaller nuclear plants, things like that, things that are going to produce less carbon dioxide. But ultimately, their plan does not include any sort of ideas that would restrict or reduce our usage of fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. It all really allows for just continued consumption of fossil fuels at roughly the current levels.
One of your colleagues at E&E News had a story about how the snafu with the Iowa caucuses, this was interesting, how that snafu might change how candidates roll out their climate policies in the future. Can you fill us in on that?
Yeah, if you look at some of the other early states like North Carolina and Nevada, which could become more prominent if Iowa is knocked, you know, down from its place as the first in the nation caucuses that really sets the pace for the primary season, those other states have sort of more urgent climate needs. North Carolina has rising sea levels, tremendous inland flooding problems. Some communities are having to relocate. In Nevada, of course, you have drought, serious water shortage issues that are made worse by climate change. So if you have a year-long campaign where the candidates are visiting frequently in one of those states, you really can't get away without talking about climate change probably fairly regularly. In Iowa, you sort of can. They focus on agricultural issues and other things, but less so on climate. So we could see a shift there.
Yeah, unless you can tie the farmers and the land into carbon capture, sequestration, things like that. So
exactly.
That's climate change also. You've also been reporting on President Trump's views on energy and water efficiency. I had trouble understanding this. Making toilets and showers great again?
Yes, it's certainly unexpected, but this is when he gets to the environmental part of his speeches at rallies. He's really been going back to these talking points in the last few weeks and I guess about 2 months ago, where he talks about how toilets don't work like they used to. You have to flush them 10 times, and showers don't wash, what he said, my beautiful head of hair. And what he's really talking about is, you know, stripping away regulations. That's obviously been a feature of his presidency, is the deregulatory message. But you know, showers are more efficient. They use a lot less water. So do toilets. And they operate just as well as they used to. The president seems to be suggesting, you know, sort of looking at, our toilet or bathroom fixtures through the lens of nostalgia, where they used to work as well, you know, much better in the past. But that's not really the case. So what he's really selling here is a deregulatory message. I think it's fairly abstract for the average person to sort of come to terms with. You know, when Trump is streamlining environmental impact statements for, you know, oil and gas production on public lands, that seems more abstract. But if they think about their bathroom and the toilets don't work like they used to, they may sort of buy into his overall message about, regulations.
Yeah. Same thing was true about the LED bulbs making him look orange, blaming that.
That's exactly right. And you can get a whole range of bulbs, by the way, because I've done this in my own house. Yeah. They look exactly like the old incandescent bulbs we're used to.
You're right. It's all part of the messaging that he's trying to reach out to his core voters. But let's talk about electric vehicles. You also wrote about President Trump's views on Tesla, whose stock has gone bananas this week, right?
That's right. I think he has this respect for Elon Musk, you know, the CEO of Tesla. He sort of sees him as this Einstein-like figure. Trump, I think, is impressed by the way, you know, obviously he's impressed by things like the way stock prices rise and fall. And Musk, through all the turmoil that Tesla's had as a company, has really had a really good last quarter. And just sort of overall, they have a future that's looking brighter than it ever has. I think the president respects that. Now, I don't see him turning around and suggesting that we should invest in, you know, electric charging stations all around the country, which is something we absolutely need to do if we're going to switch more of our cars away from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. Of course, he thinks that the American inventors and inventions like Tesla and the wheel should be protected.
That's right.
This country. One last story, which is. I don't know how to, you know, approach this. It's so sad. It's the canary in the coal mine. There was news this week about a glacier in Antarctica larger than the state of Florida, and we could get into what that means for the state of Florida, and how quickly it is melting. And there's warm water coming up from beneath that's eating away at its foundation.
That's right. And some of the glaciers in Antarctica, the reason they're so important is, you know, when you have ice that's on land and that melts, that's what causes sea levels to rise. So if the ice that's over the water, you know, breaks off, becomes an iceberg, that's not going to cause sea levels to rise. But if you have this intrusion underneath the glacier where it is essentially connecting to the land or close to the land, and the warmer water is sort of flowing into there, it's going to make the glacier, it's going to accelerate the ice loss and bring more of that ice into the water where it melts and causes sea level rise. You know, this is the kind of thing that years down the road, this could lead to 3 feet of sea level rise in some areas, including probably Florida. But, you know, I think that's on a scale of centuries that we're talking about. But nonetheless, it's a sign, a very troubling sign that, you know, the warming there is escalating. And also just, I should say yesterday, Antarctica set an all-time temperature record. It was 65 degrees there, the highest temperature ever recorded for Antarctica.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was in the peninsula. That's the part that's closest to South America.
That's right.
Comes up and runs over there. This is really interesting stuff. You know, there's going to be a debate tonight, a presidential debate, and I'm sure climate change is going to come up because climate change has now moved, right, to the top of people's, or
yes,
close to the top. I bring this up all the time whenever I talk about it. Who would have thought that after no one talked about climate change, you know, in the last presidential debate, it is now running on top of the news? It's just, it's amazing. Are you as wowed by this as I am?
I absolutely am. As somebody who covers climate, and clearly you've paid attention to it for many years, we've never seen anything like this. Certainly there's a Trump effect here where the president has sort of, you know, been a hardline denier of climate science. I think that's sort of motivating a lot of people. But we've seen a lot of pretty terrible natural disasters during his presidency, from devastating hurricanes to flooding to deadly wildfires. I think people, those things in particular, there's plenty of research that shows that's really moving the needle on voters' concerns. That it's not just Democrats. It's also more and more Republicans that are worried about this and want something done about it.
Yeah, they have to find a way of owning this issue that they've denied for so many years, don't they?
That's right. And that's what they're trying to do now in the House. But, you know, I think it really, right now, it centers around messaging, where they want to be seen as doing something. And it's hard to imagine an effective climate policy where you don't limit the use of fossil fuels.
Now, you can't go to South Carolina, where the big primary is coming, and that's a border state. It's got all that shoreline, rising sea levels. You can't go there and not have some kind of climate change message or sea level rise message, can you?
No, that's right. And same thing with Florida. You know, it's going to be an important swing state for a long time. A lot of Republicans down there are driving, you know, the need in Congress to come up with a viable climate policy, because you just can't deny it anymore. If you spend any time at a place like Miami, streets are flooding when it's sunny out.
Always great to talk to you, Scott. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. Scott Waldman, White House reporter at ENE News in Washington, D.C.